Our last oral argument is A24-0681, Dan Murphy versus City of Minneapolis and Beard Manager LLC. As all parties are aware, counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Counsel for the respondent, Beard Manager, will have 15 minutes, and finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. It's my understanding from speaking to the marshal that Beard Manager will be arguing for, in its entirety for the respondent, and the City of Minneapolis will not be arguing. So without further ado, counsel for the appellant, if you could just approach the microphone, adjust it to your level, and then just begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Good morning, Your Honor. Tom DeVink, attorney for appellant Dan Murphy. May it please the court, Tom DeVink for the appellant. Two questions before the court for consideration this morning. The first, does the record that was before the district court and now is before this court support the two setback variances granted by the City of Minneapolis to Beard Manager? The second issue, does the Municipal Planning Act empower the City of Minneapolis Planning Commission to grant variances when the City of Minneapolis has established a separate body that is designated as the Zoning Board of Appeals and has not appointed its Planning Commission to serve as its Zoning Board of Appeals? I'll start by addressing the variances, and there are two. There is the rear setback variance, and there is the reverse corner front yard setback variance. And I'm going to refer to that one because that's too many words, as just the reverse corner setback. And I think we start with the reverse corner setback because I feel it's the easier call. The standard is well known. The applicant bears the burden of establishing that it has a practical difficulty complying with the zoning control and that the practical difficulty is caused by a circumstance that's unique to the property. The standards codified in both the Municipal Planning Act and repeated again in the Minneapolis Code of Ordinances. Here, the city based its decision to grant the rare setback variance upon this. Quote, with regard to the 50th Street West frontage, the reverse corner yard creates a practical difficulty in complying with the ordinance. It states, quote, the combination of two front yard setback requirements results in setbacks that comprise an unusually large portion of the parcel, greatly reducing the buildable area. There are two reasons why that's not a legally sufficient basis for the grant of a variance. The first is what the city record is describing there is the definition of a reverse corner front yard setback. And in the docket number 11, I believe it's Exhibit D, to the affidavit submitted to the district court is the ordinance that addresses reverse corner front yards, and the drawing is actually included in the city ordinances, and that is the condition of the property owned here by the applicant. The point being, what the applicant is saying, what the city agreed with is, we have a reverse corner front yard, therefore we get a variance. They don't identify anything specific about the property other than the fact that it is a reverse corner front yard, and it is, in fact, the definition of a reverse corner front yard.
I'm not so sure about that. I guess my question for you on this issue is whether the fact that it is, in fact, a reverse corner lot is because of the house that's right next to it, right across the public alleyway.
The interior lot.
And isn't that existence of that lot being fronted on the different road, I think on 50th, isn't that in and of itself a circumstance unique to the property?
That actually is the circumstance that creates the reverse corner lot. It is only the existence of that interior lot. And again, that's on Exhibit D, Docket 11. And it shows the picture there with the interior lot that the court is describing. Without the interior lot, it's actually not a reverse corner lot. So that circumstance,
the way that lot is situated is something that the landowner of the lot that Beard Manager is trying to develop, it's not something that they have control over.
it is something that is specifically addressed in the Code of Ordinances, which is a, you know, generally applicable prospective legislative act, and it says that when you have a reverse corner lot, this is the setback. It'd be no different than if you take the interior lot out and you just have two corner lots, and the applicant said, well, we have a corner lot, that's a big setback, we don't want to honor that, we want to build bigger. This is the pre-existing condition of the applicant's property, and it's specifically addressed in the Code of Ordinances.
So your argument is that because the ordinance addresses it, it can't be eligible for a variance?
The argument is that the setback requirement itself cannot be the hardship, the practical difficulty cannot be the terms of the zoning ordinance itself. And the zoning ordinance itself defines the reverse corner lot, has a picture of it, and says what the setback is. And the applicant is saying, yes, that's too big a setback, we'd like to build bigger. It doesn't identify anything else other than the fact that it happens to own a reverse corner lot. And
how,
that was the...
Council, how does the word unique play into all this?
Well, here, because the applicant actually doesn't have a difficulty complying with the setback, that's caused by the property, it's caused by the project, we almost don't get to that part of it, but there's certainly nothing unique about a reverse corner lot. In fact, as I pointed out, it's specifically called out and addressed in the Code of Ordinances, and as the respondent has pointed out, they've now changed that ordinance.
But I assume it would have shown up regularly, wouldn't it? It doesn't sound unique at all to me.
It's not unique at all. That's my client's property, by the way. And as we looked at the exhibits in front of the district court, we could see like four of them right along 50th, just in the small area of the transit corridor we were looking at. The fact that it actually is specifically addressed in the Code of Ordinances speaks to that fact. It's not unusual. It's a kind of lot that exists all the time. There are some street corners where it's a corner lot, a corner lot. That's when you have two lots that connect the adjacent parallel streets here, Abbott and Beard, I believe. This simply doesn't have that. It has an interior lot. And so you have the two front yards, meaning you have to true up with each side of your corner lot. It's what the zoning code provides.
Council, you rely on, I hope I pronounced this right, Tullian versus City of Minneapolis to sort of make the argument you're making, which is, you know, the code can't be the problem. It's got to be the unique, it's got to be the practical difficulties. But in looking at Tullian, on page 3, isn't what makes that case different from this is, you know, the admission where the planning commissioner says, or somebody's, the planning commissioner says, there are practical difficulties associated with the current zoning code. And obviously our colleagues, you know, thought, well, that's a problem. Now there's no sort of troubling language like that in the decision made by the Planning Commission in this case. Would that be a fair statement? No one comes out and says that the practical difficulty is the code. I mean, I didn't see any of that language in the decision. I didn't see it at all. So, first of all, am I right about that?
Yeah, Tullian's a bit of an extreme case in that the city expressly stated the problem here is there's a zoning control.
Right, but that's whereas here, you know, and I understand your argument, but here they're saying in the first variance, it's the fact that that with their new development, they're going to have less square footage.
They're going to have the same square footage as every other owner of a reverse corner yard, and there is troubling language in the record.
Okay.
But I'll admit, it's not as troubling as Tullian. And here it is. The combination of two front yard setback requirements, that's the zoning control, result in setbacks that comprise an unusually large portion of the parcel, greatly reducing the buildable area. That's every setback. And the setbacks being enforced under the code here are what every owner of a reverse corner lot in the city of Minneapolis has to comply with. So that is tantamount, although not as egregious, not as forthright, one might say, but not as egregious as Tullian. But they're basically saying,
well,
gee, that setback.
The commission in this case had better lawyer.
Okay, that's funnier than most people here know. So it's tantamount to saying, you know what the problem with the setback is, the setback. And here's the other part. Where does the applicant say, we could not honor the setback? What's the problem here? The problem is the project size. So the applicant starts with their project and says, okay, here's what we designed. Tell us what we violated. Well, you violated this setback requirement and that setback requirement. Great, then we need a variance. And that brings us to the rear setback, which is more complicated, but it's the same problem. It's we designed this big project. What's the problem? Well, it's a 9-foot rear yard. We can only do 5. Okay, we have to build 4 feet closer than the law allows. Why? We've got a really big parking garage. That's great, but that's not a practical difficulty complying with the code. That's a project design decision, and I'll tell you why. The code does not require any parking. Zero. And the testimony before the city was, hey, if we don't get the rear setback, we can't have 63 parking spots. We can only have 54.
So does a practical difficulty always have to be something that comes about because of a different requirement that applies to the property or the project?
You have to have, correct. Well, you have to have a difficulty complying with the code, right? What's the problem? Why can't you build 9 feet back? And the answer was, we have a lot of parking spaces. Hey, it's a great idea, but it doesn't mean you couldn't have complied with the code. So there's no difficulty complying with the code. There's simply no desire to comply with the code.
What you're saying, counsel, is you could fully comply with the code by just making your building smaller.
Or as we call them, setbacks, right? Yeah, you have to make them smaller.
But every case where a variance is requested, they could always just modify their project to comply with the code.
Sometimes you can and sometimes you can't. Setback requirements, I think, if you think about them in a common sense perspective, would be extremely hard to get. But remember, you're not asking for a lot. Setbacks are important and they're not big. I mean, you got to build 9 feet back. Why is that impossible? What it does is it allows more open space, more conformed buildings so that they're not all jig-jaggy and you don't want to end up looking like Houston. And if you just start ignoring them because people designed things that didn't fit, you lose all the benefits of those zoning controls. And that's why the law requires that to get a variance, you have to say first, I had a problem building my project 9 feet back. And this applicant doesn't say that. This applicant says, I had a problem fitting my garage. The garage is not a zoning requirement. I'll give an example where I think there would be a case for a variance. Let's say there's a lot coverage requirement. Okay, you have to cover 70% of your lot with your build. But you've got bedrock in some portion of your lot, and you're like, well, if I'm going to cover 70% of this lot, I got bedrock I can't build on for whatever reason. I've got to go 3 feet closer to the lot line than the zoning control provides. You could see a city planning commission or a zoning board of appeals, saying, hey, that's a hardship. There's a practical difficulty complying with that setback requirement because they also have a lot coverage requirement and they've got this condition here, which is unique, this bedrock that's getting right in their way. But that's entirely different than saying, look what I designed. I'm sorry it doesn't fit. Give me some variances. And that's essentially when you boil down this record what you're looking at. There's no problem complying with these zoning controls. There's no difficulty. There's simply no desire to. Under the municipal, I'll move on to the second issue, whether the Planning Commission is properly authorized under the Municipal Planning Act to issue variances. Appellant contends that body cannot, not in the city of Minneapolis anyway, because in the city they have a Zoning Board of Appeals, and that Zoning Board of Appeals is expressly empowered to grant variances in concert with the Municipal Planning Act. This is what.
But isn't the Planning Commission allowed to do that on these specific kinds of projects? Doesn't the language of the ordinance allow for that?
The city thinks it can, but it has to comply with the Municipal Planning Act, which under Nordmark and controls and preempts. So whatever the city does, it must be consistent with Chapter 462, and here it's not, because they've exceeded what state law allows. And we have to start with this premise. If it's not authorized by the Municipal Planning Act, you can't do it, right? The all of the power that the city of Minneapolis can exercise in this land use field comes from the Municipal Planning Act. And what the Municipal Planning Act says is you had two choices. You could designate a zoning board of appeals, and Minneapolis did that, or you can have other bodies sit as your zoning board of appeals. For example, your planning commission. And, you know, like me at Country Barrel Buffet, they said, we want both, right? We're gonna have a zoning board of appeals, and we're going to have our planning commission, when it suits our purposes for concurrent review, also have the power to grant variances. That's not an option under the Municipal Planning Act.
Where in the statute's language do you see that that is prohibited?
That's in the section that defines, and it's cited in the brief. I'll have it on rebuttal, the exact site. But what it is the section that applies to variances. It's on the Zoning Board of Appeals section, and it says they grant variances. And we have to read that in concert with this underpinning thought. It's the exclusive grant of power. If the statute doesn't expressly grant the power, it doesn't exist.
It doesn't say exclusive in the language of the statute.
And it shouldn't. And it can't, because you can designate your planning commission to be your zoning board of appeals. You have that option. So if it said exclusive, I'm sorry, my time is up. If you said exclusive, you'd be contradicting yourself. And the appellant's position, Your Honor, is it doesn't need to say exclusive, because it's understood that it's either expressly granted, the power is either expressly granted there in the MPA, or it's not. So that's the legal basis on which my client contends. It doesn't need to say exclusive, and there's a good reason why it doesn't.
Okay. And when you come back to, I'm wondering why we wouldn't read Nordmarken to be limited only to the referenda. Why does it apply here?
Fair enough.
Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Your Honor, Richard Jensen, appearing on behalf of respondent Beard Manager. With me at counsel table is Haynes Hansen with the City of Minneapolis Attorney's Office, representing the City of Minneapolis. And as Your Honor noted, for expediency, I will be presenting the entire argument. Before I get into that, however, I'd like to address the standard of review. This is not, as appellant contends, an appeal from summary judgment. It's an appeal from judgment on the city's official record that has an entirely different standard of review. The standard in this case is the rational basis test, and essentially the reviewing court will not reverse a governing body's decision if the governing body acted, or unless the governing body acted unreasonably, arbitrarily, or capriciously. The court may not substitute its judgment for that of the governing body, even if the court thinks the governing body was wrong. Although not binding on this court, I think the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals aptly put it as follows. The board, or in this case the city, has the right to be wrong, dead wrong, but not unfairly, arbitrarily wrong. Finally, I think it's important to note, as the appealing party appealing the city's decision, appellant had the burden of proof.
And we appreciate that. What is your response to the argument that was just made? That is, this is sort of, you know, Tillian light, in that the setback is the setback, and that's the practical difficulty. All setbacks, you know, by definition, you know, you get less footage. So why is he wrong when he says, you're just saying that the setback is the problem, and that can't be right if we look at Tillian? So why is he wrong?
Your Honor, in this situation, obviously there's this reverse corner lot situation, which... Yeah. That city found was an uncommon situation.
And uncommon appellant, doesn't mean unique.
That is correct, Your Honor, and I will address that next. So appellant argues that this is purely an issue of the ordinance. Basically, Beard Manager wants to get around the ordinance. The ordinance says what it says, and Beard Manager wants to do something else. But that's not the situation here. In every case, the property owner is trying to get around a variance. It's the very nature of a variance. The property owner wants to do something with his or her property. The ordinance doesn't allow it, so the property owner asks for a variance from the ordinance.
But you want to build an apartment building, and you can still do that. You just have to build it smaller.
That's correct, Your Honor, but that's not the correct interpretation of the law.
Why isn't it? Isn't the whole purpose of the law to allow a landowner to use his or her property in the way they would like, which is as an apartment building, but that doesn't mean you can't comply with setbacks.
Your Honor, that goes to the issue of reasonable use, and as you know, appellant argues, and I'll quote, there is absolutely nothing that precludes Beard Manager from building a smaller project that complies with the city's zoning ordinance. However, whether the property could be put to a reasonable use that still complies with the ordinance is not the correct standard. That was the old standard that was addressed in the Krumacher case that we cited in our brief. And in that case, the court found that...
And then the statute changed that.
And the statute changed that.
So the bottom line is, it's the reasonable use you want to make of it. And the reasonable use you want to make it is with the parking lots, excuse me, the parking spaces you want.
Okay. Correct.
Okay, that's so correct. Fair enough. I get that. But again, would it be fair to say that all... of these setback requirements always result in whoever is there getting, you know, less square footage if they want to do something? Is that a fair statement?
Yes, if they comply with the setback requirements, for example, here, the right. reverse corner lot.
I mean, that's the whole point of a setback.
It's setback,
I mean, you know, you can't,
15 feet.
You know, you can't, correct. You know, if you got something on the lake, by God, you can't put your... You can't build right to the edge of the lake, and you know you can't, and you know there's all reasons for that. But explain to me again, why isn't this? You just don't like the ordinance because the ordinance has setback requirements, and that's unique to all setback requirements. So what's, again, unique to what you need? What makes this so difficult? What's make this so unique for you, following up on Judge Kirk's question?
Your Honor, the uniqueness language, the courts do not construe it as actually being required to be unique. What's required is that condition be basically not common. The court in the Merriam case expressly found that the property does not need to be different from all other properties. And in fact, the court stated if that were the law, then you could almost never have a variance.
Fair enough. Then let's focus on the practical difficulties. I mean, don't all setback requirements have practical difficulties? So what makes the practical difficulties, what's the practical difficulties that you're establishing here that gets you the variance from the ordinance on setback requirements?
Your Honor, the law provides that, and I'll quote from the statute, the property owner proposes to use the property in a reasonable manner not permitted by the zoning ordinance. That is the practical difficulty. That's how the law defines the practical difficulty. And, you know, Your Honor is correct. It's a 15-yard or 15-foot front yard setback, and every property has that. But that doesn't mean that a variance can't be granted. As the district court noted, every project can be changed or discarded entirely in order to comply with the ordinance. But under that standard, variances would never be justified. For example, in this case.
Well, that's certainly good language for you. And, you know, he's got good language for Tullian. So, again, explain to me the practical difficulties, again, that these setback requirements, you know, get you to the variance.
Your Honor, I'll explain this by reference to the Neighbors for East Bank Livability case that we quote in our brief. And in that case, the property owner planned to build a 40-story condominium tower across the river from downtown Minneapolis. The problem, however, was that surrounding properties had structures on them that caused, under the ordinance, the Minneapolis ordinance, caused the property owner not to be able to build its 40-story condominium tower. And as a result, the city granted a variance to allow the property owner to build it. There was nothing about the property. There was nothing particularly unique about what the property owner wanted to do. And that's not the requirement. The requirement is not that you can't do anything with the property. The requirement is that you plan to do something that's reasonable with the property, and the zoning ordinance does not allow you to do that.
Do you have a better argument with the second variance because of the slope? That seemed to make that seemed to be more aligned with your practical difficulties.
Well, yeah, I think that one is very straightforward. The property sloped from front to back. Beard Manager wanted to put in underground parking with 16 stalls to match the number of units in the building. But in order to do that, it needed a variance, and the city granted it. There was clearly a practical difficulty. It wasn't something that was unique. I mean, properties all over the city have slopes. There's no requirement that it be a unique situation faced only by this property. And I would submit that the two variances they are not different. It's just a matter of, in the case of the reverse corner lot, it's the adjacent property that causes the problem. Because of the platting of the adjacent property across the alley, Beard Manager has essentially two front yard setbacks. And council is right that there are other properties that have this issue, but that is not, that's not the standard.
So it's your position that the existence and the nature of the property next to it is the circumstance that the unique circumstance that the Beard Manager property owner has no control over?
That is precisely it, and that is precisely the Neighbors for East Bank Livability issue. The adjacent properties were configured. They had buildings on them such that prevented the landowner from using the property as intended. I would like to now, during my few remaining minutes, address this argument that the Minneapolis Planning Commission had no authority to issue variances. There's nothing, as Your Honor noted, there's nothing in the Municipal Planning Act, the MPA, that says that. In fact, the MPA says that the Planning Commission shall be advisory except as other powers and duties are imposed upon it by, and then it continues on, charter or by ordinance. So in this case, the City of Minneapolis has decided properly that it wants to have its Planning Commission have the power to consider and rule on variances. And it has very good reasons for doing so that are stated in our brief, and I won't take time to do that, but it's expressly allowed by statute. Planning Commission can exercise such powers and duties imposed upon it by charter or ordinance. Now, the statutes have a different requirement for counties. For counties, the statutes are virtually identical, with the exception that for counties, the Board of Appeals and Adjustments has exclusive authority. It's expressly stated in the statute. So, as the court knows, and I'll state something from the General Mills case that's quoted in our brief, when the legislature uses limiting or modifying language in one part of the statute but omits it from another, we regard that omission as intentional and will not add those same words or limitations of limitation or modification. So in other words, the court or the statute has two different requirements, one for counties and one for municipalities. The one for municipalities does not make the right to consider variances the sole authority. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jensen. Mr. DeVink, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. As to the court's inquiry regarding Nordmarken, the appellant relies on the Nordmarken holding, quote, the process for adopting and approving land use, for adopting and approving land use planning and zoning ordinances is so fully covered by state law that it has become solely a matter of state concern. Local regulation by referendum of the process for land use planning and zoning is sufficiently antithetical to the avowed purposes of creating a single body of law and uniform procedure that it has substantial potential for adverse effect on the population. So by its terms, what Nordmarken addressed was the referendum process. But the appellant would urge a more expansive reading of Nordmarken based on the holding of the court, which is it is solely a matter of state concern and it is entirely regulated by state statute, meaning a local ordinance could not conflict with the MPA. And I don't take the respondent's position to be that they have authority beyond the MPA. I hear their position to be we're in compliance with the MPA. We're not doing that. The city of Minneapolis is certainly not doing anything in violation of the MPA. That's how I read the respondent's position on that issue.
Would you agree in terms of your preemption argument that you're essentially arguing that there's a conflict between the city ordinance and the MPA? You're not arguing that there's any other type of preemption going on here, right?
That's exactly right. The appellant argues, Your Honor, that of the options provided by the MPA to the city, they did not have the option of establishing a zoning board of appeals and then also empowering a planning commission to also grant variances. And
And you're basing that on your plain language interpretation of the MPA.
That is exactly correct. Okay. And while the appellant certainly understands the reasoning, the policy reasoning advanced by the respondents, and it may be good common sense and make the concurrent review that's advocated, by the respondent. That doesn't change the fact that in appellant's mind, the appellant's argument is that they are stepping beyond the authority that is expressly provided in the MPA, and they're at odds with that statute.
Thank you.
I think I've said everything I need to say. The only thing that stood out is that I noticed that the respondent said we needed a variance to build a garage. And so, again, that may be true, but it doesn't ever implicate any difficulty complying with the zoning control that everyone else has to comply with. And there's good reasons for these setbacks. And if the reason for doing away with the setbacks, to get special permission to ignore and violate the setbacks, if the reason for that is I designed a very big building, that's not legal land use planning.
What would be, all right, fair enough. Okay, so then what would be a valid basis to get a variance from these setback requirements? What would be a valid, what would it be?
Yeah, and I would return to the example that I think I came up with, like, on the way over here, which is you have a lot coverage requirement. You need to build 70% of your lot needs to have a structure on it. You can't do that because you have, let's say, a old growth tree stand in the middle of your property, in the back, something on your property. It's protected, or it's bedrock that you can't build into. So the only way to cover the lot 70% is, well, I can't start my building 10 feet from the lot line. I have to build 5 feet closer. Then I can cover the lot 70%, but I can't comply with this. I'm having a difficulty complying with that setback. Can I get a variance so I can build closer? I think that would...
response be, well, tough. You know, then you'll just have to build something that's got 60%. I mean, and isn't that essentially your argument here? They could just build something smaller?
No, my argument here is the law requires them to build something smaller. It would require anyone else in their circumstance to build something smaller.
Well, you know, in that example you gave, then the requirement would be, well, tough. You know, make it 60%, not 70%. How is that different from them wanting a garage?
I think a governmental body could always just say, well, tough. But my point is, I think that applicant has made the showing required by law. And if the...
Your example.
In my example. And I think if the government decided to say, oh, tough, I think that applicant could bring a claim and say, I think I met the standard here. I have a practical difficulty complying with the ordinance. And under state law and probably the mirroring local ordinance, as in this case, I'm entitled to a variance, and those cases exist as well, where variances are compelled, and there are cases where variances are granted, and the Tullian decision does have, does recite those cases and give examples, I believe, of both examples, or both kinds of cases. I'm sorry, my time is up.
I have a question.
Go right ahead, Judge Mueller.
Okay. Yes. Distinguish this situation from Neighbors for East Bank livability for me.
In East Bank, the municipality in East Bank made detailed findings about the situation confronted by that applicant and tied the difficulty in complying with the code to circumstances that were unique to the property. What stands out about East Bank is that those conditions weren't necessarily on the applicant's land itself, but were tied to property maybe owned by others. The reason why, and they made, like I said, detailed factual findings. It's a well done record, and it's a really interesting opinion to read on that issue. But in this case, we don't have that. Again, as the court properly noted, there's a lot next to you. Therefore, you're stuck with these setbacks you don't like. They're too big. But that lot next to you, again, that's specifically addressed with a picture in this code of ordinances saying, yeah, this is a known thing. It's a reverse corner yard. When you have one of those, these are the setbacks. So there's nothing unique about it, and there's no hardship here, but there's certainly no difficulty complying with the code. They certainly could have honored those front yard setbacks, and they simply chose not to for no reason relating to zone code compliance. And in East Bank livability, you do have that, Your Honor.
Does that apply to the slope as well in the second ordinance?
So I totally agree with the court, not that it matters, but it's a closer call, right? Because and Murphy concedes that there's a unique circumstance here. There's the slope. The appellant's argument is that unique circumstance doesn't implicate code compliance. again, it's something that got in the way of their garage, not in the way of code compliance. And they didn't have a requirement to have parking. At the end of the day, this applicant could have built a conforming project. There was no reason not to, right? There's no reason not to comply with the code. And you have to have a reason. You have to have a difficulty. They just have a big project. If that gets you a variance, why would we even need the process? I could simply say, this is what I'm building. When do I start? If there's nothing further, thank you for the extra time.
Thank you.
Appreciate
thank you very much, counsel. The matter is submitted. We will issue our decision within 90 days. That being our last case, the oral argument of the day, we are adjourned.